Welcome, everyone. I'm Mike.
I'm Ben.
I'm Ruben.
And I'm Michelle, and we're the host of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast.
Hello, guys.
How you doing?
Hello. Welcome back.
Welcome back, everyone. Week and going.
My weekend's going good so far.
Yeah.
Mine too.
It's hot outside. Yeah.
Oh,
very hot.
It's going to be in the hundreds today again, or what?
Yep.
Maybe. Okay. I know, 99.
It's 99.
It's going to feel like it's 102.
Mm-hmm. Summer sucks.
Yep. It's not even summer yet.
What case are we covering today, guys?
Today we'll be covering the case of the boy in the box.
Dude, this is a sad case.
Yeah, no, that is a very sad case.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the case now.
The boy in the box is an unidentified murder victim who was a 4 to 6 year old boy whose naked battered body was found on the side of Susquehanna Road in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on February 25th, 1957. He was found stuffed inside a cardboard box lying in a bassinet sold by JCPenney and covered in a blanket. He appeared to have been clean and freshly groomed with a haircut and trimmed fingernails, although he had been severely beaten, bruised, and malnourished.
Poor dude.
The body was covered with scars, some of which were surgical, most notably on his ankle, groin, and L-shaped scar under the chin. And his hair had been cut in an unprofessional manner as hair clumps were found on his body.
Yeah, I've seen the body. You can see how the haircut was.
How it was?
It was just like choppy.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it on his body?
Fell on his body.
Yeah. Oh. And he had some in his hand too, I think.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe they were trying to cut his hair and he wouldn't sit still and they got mad?
Maybe. They didn't really care.
Yeah.
Maybe it was after he died.
No, it was after he died?
Well, maybe.
So they beat him up and they cleaned him up.
Probably to maybe change his identity, his appearance. Mm-hmm. Sad.
Whoever did it.
Hope they rot in hell. He had like surgical scars on his groin. Oh.
Did they discuss that in any of the details of the case?
I haven't seen it, but I heard about it. But then, what were they?
Who knows?
What were they trying to... Ugh.
And it is believed that the cause of death was homicide with blunt force trauma. The boy remains unidentified, as no one has ever claimed to recognize him. For this reason, he is also known as America's unknown child. The case remains unsolved and is still open.
Oh,
it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to this day. Well, who knows? Maybe they might find who did it, but...
Well, there was like a news piece, I guess you can call it.
Uh-huh.
That it was like 5 months ago.
Oh, okay.
And they said they were getting close...
To identifying him. Oh, really?
But
yeah.
That was like 5 months ago. They still haven't.
It's kind of like, did y'all hear about the recent case of the little boy they found in his Las Vegas suitcase?
No.
You know, y'all haven't heard that one?
No.
No?
Well, I found it.
I'm sorry.
No, I read it when I was scrolling through Facebook. I forgot what website had put it on there, but somewhere I forgot where they had found a, someone had found a, and the luggage itself would look like a brand new luggage, and it had I guess it had to do with Vegas. I don't know what.
No.
On there?
Yeah.
And they opened it up and there was, I think the little boy was like 4 or 5 years old.
Mm.
He was stuffed in there.
That sucks.
Yeah.
The body was first discovered by a young man who was checking his muskrat traps. And fearing that the police would confiscate his traps, he did not report what he had found.
Man.
Yeah, I heard
he was more worried about the muskrat traps. They were illegal.
He didn't want to get caught.
Yeah.
The muskrats.
His traps were more important.
That guy's a moron.
Which one? The ones with muskrat traps?
Yes.
Stupid muskrats.
I know.
They're not even real rats.
Stupid. What do you do? You eat them or you with the fur? Or for the fur?
Yeah, I was going to say, what is he going to do with muskrat? What the fuck is a muskrat anyway?
Yeah, what is a muskrat? I was about to say something.
Muskrats, I don't know.
It's like kind of, some kind of a rat.
Some kind of animal.
And the beaver animal? And the beaver family?
It's probably smaller.
Or a raccoon family.
Some kind of animal.
They show a picture of it.
Is it looks like one of those little...
They showed a picture on it.
Ferrets type
kind of thing? Kind of like a ferret.
It's a feral ferret, Ben.
say that 3 times fast.
A few days later, a college student spotted a rabbit running into the underbrush. Knowing that there were animal traps in the area, he stopped his car to investigate and discovered the body. It eventually emerged that he had actually been in the area spying on students at a nearby school.
What a pervert.
So he's being a pervert.
So, yeah.
So both guys didn't want to get caught doing their own
illegal activity.
I know. What a
stupid pervert. That was kind of like a dumb excuse. Knowing there was traps in there.
I know. Right, I'll do it. I didn't want to go in because of the traps. And then when they discover the body, I was there, but you know. Anyone ever to know that I was being a perv and I was looking at kids. Why was he spying on students?
He's a pervert.
Yeah.
He was reluctant to have any contact with the police, but ended up reporting what he had found to the police. After he saw a news report about a 4-year-old girl that was missing, and it was then that he thought he had better call the police. The missing girl was found 1 week later and had died from starvation in an abandoned house.
That's another sad case.
Wow.
So he only called police because he saw that news
report?
Well, I guess he had some kind of dignity. Idiot. Pervert.
So the 4-year-old girl, but she wasn't found in the same area, right?
No. I think it was like
another case.
Wow. Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about the investigation.
The police received a report and opened an investigation on February 26, 1957. The dead boy's fingerprints were taken, and police at first were optimistic that he would soon be identified. However, no one ever came forward with any useful information. It's been like that for...
how many years?
A long time.
Very long.
60-something years.
Okay, so how did they get fingerprints back in the day, but they would just, like, I mean...
how was, like,
because they took
he was not in jail, so how would they compare the...
that's before all of that.
No, I'm not being smart as with you.
I know what you mean, though, but that was way before the whole McGruff dude taking your fingerprints and all that. You know what I'm trying to get at? So back in the 50s, how would they do it on a missing case when they're... or, like, for instance, not missing case, but they find, you know, a dead body and take fingerprints?
I'm not sure.
I'm just saying because, like, they said that they were waiting for... no one came up with anything, right?
Mm-mm.
So, what do they do? Show pictures of the prints of the fingerprints and, like...
Identifying the body. That's a good question. Yeah, but
I don't understand the whole why they needed the fingerprints.
Fingerprints, yeah. Hmm. Like I said, he wasn't in jail.
Yeah.
So there was no database.
Yeah.
And he was too young to be doing anything. Like, he was not supposed to.
Yeah.
Who knows, man?
Yeah. Good question. As always.
The case attracted massive media attention in Philadelphia and the Delaware Valley. The Philadelphia Inquirer printed 400,000 flyers depicting the boy's likeness, which were sent out and posted across the area and were included with every gas bill in Philadelphia. The crime scene was combed over and over again by 270 police academy recruits, who discovered a man's blue corduroy cap, a child's scarf, and a man's white handkerchief with a letter G in the corner. All clues that led nowhere.
Okay, so I wonder why every gas bill.
That what?
They put the picture on the gas.
Oh, maybe that's how
they spread word back then.
Yeah.
Right.
It goes to every house.
Like, maybe instead of just doing.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
When did they start doing the milk cartons?
I was just about to ask.
Maybe that was before the milk cartons. They put it on the bill.
Like, maybe the 80s.
Yeah, they did the milk cartons.
Right.
So maybe this is their way of doing
it. Yeah.
Because everyone had gas, right? At that time, there was no electric or anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so they just described them. They didn't...
yeah.
Oh, because, there was no way back then to take pictures and...
well, maybe pictures.
But I guess it was just too horrible to
see. Yeah, but he was, like, badly beaten up, I think.
Yeah.
They even, like... I don't know if we're going to read about it later, but... they even, like, dressed him up like a regular kid, and they posed him to see if that would help.
To see if anyone would
recognize him. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't want to be mean. It looked kind of like
creepy.
Creepy, yeah.
Well, no. Well, did you know?
Creepy and sad.
Did you know back in the 1800s, it was known to take pictures of when you loved one?
That's kind of weird.
That's
kind of weird. It
would be like, sometimes I get those, that creepy catalog, and sometimes it would be like 18 creepy photos, I don't know what, and there was one of a group of children in their school, right? And they're taking a school picture. And they're like, but what's wrong with the picture? Or once you see it, you know, you freak out. So I'm reading through it, and supposedly, and they circle it, there's one girl there, one student that she had passed away. And so they took her to the school, I guess, and they had her take a picture with all of her
classmates,
and then they take pictures with their parents, and and it's like going on now. Did you hear about that rapper? I don't know who the rapper was, but they had his body out of the coffin and standing and everything at a club that I guess he would rap
at. This is weird.
Yeah, I was just like,
that's weird. That's creepy.
Weird. That is.
Go take a picture with him.
I don't know. They probably did. Didn't say anything about it, but they were saying that
were girls stroking him?
You never know. Who knows? But oh my gosh. It's, I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so they also found a handkerchief with a letter G in the corner.
And a child's scarf. Yeah, they got word everywhere and the little evidence and they couldn't get nothing.
I know.
I wonder if they would have maybe sent out a thing about maybe finding the handkerchief with the letter G on it.
Like, right. Yeah.
Along with the description of the boy.
Yeah.
Also a description of what they found. Anyone knows with that?
Someone has to have known something.
But you know what? Back in those days, did they handmade those handkerchiefs? Like, you know what I'm trying to get at? Like,
well, maybe.
I wonder if back in the day they would have been able to go over there to, you know, to stores and be like, well, who comes in here and gets their thing monogrammed with the letter G?
Yeah.
And get a list of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the rules were back then.
Yeah.
With the law enforcement.
Well, not as nice today.
Right?
Yeah.
Not advanced at all. The police also distributed a post-mortem photograph of the boy, fully dressed, and in a seated position, as he may have looked in life, and the hope it might lead to a clue. Despite the publicity and sporadic interest throughout the years, the boy's identity is still unknown, and the case remains unsolved to this day. On March 21st, 2016, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released a forensic facial reconstruction of the victim and added him into their database. In August 2018, Barbara Ray Venter, the genetic genealogist who helped to identify the Golden State Killer using a DNA profiling technique, said that she was using the same method to try to identify the boy in the box. Amateur groups that use online databases such as the Doe Network and Whips Loose have also tried to identify him.
It's just been hard trying to identify
him. Yeah. But someone has to know him.
I'm sure someone does, but no one wants to talk about it. You know how back in the day, I mean, you know how it is. Even if a family member saw it,
they're not going to get it through.
They're going to keep it. You know, especially if he was in a weird-ass family, too. They are. You know what I'm trying to get at?
Mm-hmm. I just feel bad for him.
I know.
But yeah, they, like I said, they dressed him up post-mortem.
Yeah.
It didn't look right.
It looked sad. Yeah. It's a sad situation. But I'm glad they're using modern technology to try to identify them.
I know. I hope they do soon.
Mm-hmm. He needs a, what's a closure?
Yeah.
At least know who he is.
At least put a name to the
face.
And they probably won't catch the people who did it.
Yeah,
they might be dead by now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all gone.
Unfortunately. Too bad they didn't face justice.
Let's get into the theories.
Yes, many tips and theories have been advanced in the case. Although most of these have been dismissed, two theories have generated considerable interest among the police and media. They have each been extensively investigated.
So the first one's the foster home theory.
And this theory concerns a foster home that was located approximately 1.5 miles from the site of the body. In 1960, Remington Bristow, an employee of the medical examiner's office who closely pursued the case until his death in 1993, contacted a New Jersey psychic who told him to look for a house that matched the foster home. When the psychic was brought to the Philadelphia Discovery site, she led Bristow directly to the foster home. Upon attending the state cell at the foster home, Bristow discovered a bassinet similar to the one sold at JCPenney. He also discovered blankets hanging on the clothesline that were similar to the one in which the boy's body had been wrapped. And when they discovered it.
Oh, so they had that same box?
Yeah, anything that they found on the boy, it was there at the foster home. Everything similar. It wasn't like directly alike,
but it's similar stuff. Wow,
that's interesting.
And where's the psychic from New Jersey? When did they contact the psychic? Back in the '60s or in the '90s? No, he died in the '90s, but.
1960. Didn't really say. Oh, yeah,
1960.
Is when he did it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there's the psychics, because, you know.
Yeah.
But how big was the news, though? Like, was it around the world news, or was it just in the area news?
Maybe around the area, maybe nation.
Nation,
might. I don't know, actually. I'm sorry.
Well, I think it's just like, what, did he believe her?
You always ask questions that I don't know.
So they were still using psychics even then?
Yeah. Yep. But I'm like, can you trust it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's some that you can trust, but there's some that if they read too much you would have to pick someone who really has the background of being psychic, but who really knows nothing about the case, I would say.
Yeah.
So when they go in and they take him and they're just like, oh, okay, okay. And they don't know anything. That's how I would believe it. It's like, well, I didn't tell her anything. I, you know.
Yeah. And there was no internet back then.
Mm-hmm. No internet news articles, but.
Yeah.
They found some of her stuff. Sounds believable.
Yeah. But even if she did know a little bit, I think there's some too that say, like, if they touch a picture, they can just get, like,
the vibe.
Picture or clothing or anything they can get.
Oh, and it was only, one and a half miles away from the dump site, right?
You see, back in the day, you know, they say the foster care system, I mean, even till this day, they always say the foster care system isn't all that great.
Yeah.
So, say he was given up for adoption, right? And he's getting two different foster homes. Maybe he just landed in one that they were just there for them. I don't know. Back then, they were getting paid for watching them like they do now.
Maybe.
You know, but maybe they just wanted that check and then didn't really care about him, which happens. Just so sad.
Bristol believed the boy belonged to the stepfather of the man who ran the foster home and that they disposed of the body so the stepdaughter will not be exposed to an unwed mother. He theorized that the boy's death had been an accident. Despite this circumstantial evidence, the police were not able to find any definite links between the boy in the box and the foster family. In 1998, Philadelphia Police Lieutenant Tom Augustine, who was in charge of the investigation, and several members of the VDOC Society, a group of retired policemen and profilers, interviewed the foster father and the stepdaughter, whom he had married. Wow.
What?
The foster home investigation was closed.
So they found nothing?
No.
Just...
So they didn't go with, so...
So the foster father married the stepdaughter?
Yeah.
They didn't find, like, any evidence to, like, charge them?
No, yeah, they didn't find any, like, criminal.
Circumstantial?
No, I guess not. If you don't think they closed that theory.
We've talked about the foster home theory. Now let's talk about the woman known as Martha or M theory.
Another theory was brought forward in February 2002 by a woman identified only as Martha. Police consider Martha's story to be plausible, but were troubled by her testimony as she had a history of mental illness. M claimed that her abusive mother had purchased the unknown boy, whose name was Jonathan, from his birth parents in the summer of 1954. Subsequently, the boy was subjected to extreme physical and sexual abuse for 2.5 years. One evening at dinner, the boy vomited up his meal of baked beans and was given a severe beating with his head slammed against the floor until he was semi-conscious. He was given a bath during which he died. These details match information known only to the police, as the coroner had found that the boy's stomach contained the remains of baked beans and that his fingers were water wrinkled.
Oh, so he had baked beans in his stomach?
Yeah.
This theory is, well, so far is going along with what happened to him, right?
Yes.
So... Well, it was known back in the day, right, that when family can't afford, like, say, you know, well, because they had a lot of kids, right?
Yeah.
Because I know seeing one picture in the late 40s, I want to say, that some lady was selling her kids because she couldn't afford them because that's when everything was going on, right?
Yeah.
So it was going on even till then?
I guess.
Maybe.
Maybe. Are they just bad parents?
It's really, you know, her brother, but she doesn't want to say, like,
like, give up her mom or...
Yeah, well, she's giving up her mom.
Oh, she is.
She is, but, like, she didn't want to say, like, well, she's beating her own son.
Yeah.
Because that's...
To make it look less...
Yeah.
Bad, but it's still bad.
Maybe because she'll get in trouble, too.
Did they say anything about him being sexual abused when they were...
I don't think so.
No? So they kind of kept that to themselves a
little bit? So. And so his hands were wrinkled because of the bath, right?
Yes, and then they say that he got his nails clipped. Or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was hand.
But only the... I was thinking maybe she heard about the case and she's just trying to throw her mom under the bus.
That too.
But then...
Only, she knows details that they only bring you.
Yeah,
only
that's what I'm saying. Like, only the police knew certain stuff that you take out. So, and that's a very kind of smart thing to do too. Because let's not put out every detail and let's see if one of them pops up.
Yep.
And be like, okay, then we might go with this one right here. I just
can't believe this one's not it.
I don't think they should have just pushed her aside because of her mental illness.
Yeah. Yeah, but back then it was weird back then. You looked weird, you were mental.
Yeah.
Not right? True.
Different situation.
Yeah, like if
different times.
Different, yeah. That's the thing. Like even if you had simple like limp and all of a sudden you just have mental problems. You know the one with the limp? That's how they would describe you back in the day.
M's mother cut the boy's distinctive long hair. accounting for the unprofessional haircut, which police noted in their initial investigation. In an effort to conceal his identity, M's mother forced M to assist her in dumping the boy's body in the Fox Chase area. M said that as they were preparing to move the boy's body from the trunk of a car, a passing male motorist pulled alongside to inquire whether they needed help. M was ordered to stand in front of the car's license plate to shield it from view while the mother convinced the would-be Good Samaritan that there was no problem. The man eventually drove off. This story corroborated confidential testimony given by a male witness in 1957, who said that the body had been placed in a box previously discarded at the scene. In spite of the outward plausibility of M's confession, police were unable to verify her story. Neighbors who had access to M's house during the stated time period denied that there had been a young boy living there and dismissed M's claims as ridiculous.
Again, she's like kind of like on it, yes, on the stuff that they found.
Well, I believe her.
I kind of believe
her. I kind of believe her too.
It's just, I don't know why they brushed her aside too fast.
Probably because they thought she was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe because nobody had seen the boy.
Did they discuss, it wasn't mentioned like what was wrong with her, right? And why they thought she had mental illness. No, this is mental.
That sounds credible.
Or maybe because nobody had seen the boy. Huh? Nobody had seen the boy before. But if you're beating somebody, you don't want him to be visibly seen by anybody.
Yeah. True. True.
Could have done that.
Yeah.
Hit him away in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
In the attic.
Yeah.
She knows too much to just dismiss it.
And there are other theories out there. Forensic artist Frank Bender developed the theory that the victim may have been raised as a girl. The child's unprofessional haircut, which appeared to have been performed in haste, was the basis for the scenario, as well as the appearance of the eyebrows having been styled. In 2008, Bender released a sketch of the unidentified child with long hair, reflecting the strands found on the body. In 2016, two writers, one from Los Angeles, California, Jim Hoffman, and the other from New Jersey, Luis Romano, explained that they believed that they had discovered a potential identity from Memphis, Tennessee, and requested that DNA be compared between the family members and the child. The lead was originally discovered by a Philadelphia man who introduced Romano and Hoffman to each other, and was developed and presented with the help of Hoffman to the Philadelphia Police Department and the Vidoc Society in early 2013. In December 2013, Romano became aware of the lead and agreed to help the man from Philadelphia and Hoffman to obtain the DNA from this particular family member in January 2014, which was sent quickly to the Philadelphia Police Department. Local authorities confirmed that they would investigate the lead, but said they would need to do more research on the circumstances surrounding the link to Memphis before comparing DNA. In December of 2017, Homicide Sergeant Bob Colmier confirmed that DNA taken from the Memphis man was compared to the Fox Chase boy, and there was no connection.
So the theory was wrong then? Oh, not theory, yeah, it was wrong, but theory. That lead didn't follow through?
Because of DNA.
Okay.
There's another theory, which is called the Carney people theory.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
This is my first time hearing about it.
Yeah, it's kind of new.
Kenneth Dudley and his wife Adele Irene Dudley had 10 children together. Kenneth was a carnival worker, and in 1961, an investigation was launched into the family when their 7-year-old daughter turned up dead from malnutrition and neglect. They didn't bury her. Instead, they wrapped her in a blanket and placed her in the woods just off Route 1 near Lawrenceville, Virginia. The child had passed away on May 27, 1960, in Gary, West Virginia. In fact, not a single child they murdered was given a proper burial by them. They were all dumped or thrown in rivers. In total, the Dudleys killed 7 of their children through neglect and abuse. Kenneth was said to have beaten the children in fits of anger over little things. Irene was also known to abuse and neglect the children. It's not known what happened to the other 3 children they had, nor is it known what happened to the Dudleys after the trial. They were ruled out as the parents of the boy in the box, as the bodies of their 7 children were recovered.
What the? Really? So they just killed
their kids?
All their family. Having kids and exactly. You don't want to take care of them.
Damn corny people.
I'm telling you, man.
Never trust them.
Wow. Wow. So they had 10, and out of the 10, they killed 7.
Yep.
But was it with it? But how was that? Well,
it's kind of, they're trying to throw them into it with the way the first daughter was killed.
Okay, I see.
How she was wrapped up in a blanket.
Yeah.
And a box.
I mean, hey.
Well, not really a box. It was just not really a box.
Maybe M's mom bought the little boy from these carny people because, I mean...
Well, maybe they travel, right?
That's a possibility.
Maybe.
And maybe he was the way he already was. You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah.
And he just died on him. He didn't know what to do. I mean, that's one theory you can go by.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know, because maybe it was their son, but they're just not owning up to it.
Yeah. And look, what does it mean by they don't know what happened to the...
To the other three.
Oh, after the trial.
Yeah.
So they were found not guilty?
They were ruled out as the parents of AUC as the bodies of the Sutter children were recovered.
What is
AUC? Oh, no, you know what happened to the Dudleys after the... Oh, I guess nobody knows if they got convicted or not. Because if you really think about it, I mean, how can you not report your child missing?
Yeah.
And then you keep having kids and they keep dying. I mean, I can understand like a pandemic was going on.
That's another sad.
Yeah, they would just kill him. So next we're going to talk about the burial.
Yes.
The boy in the box was originally buried in Potter's Field. In 1998, his body was exhumed for the purpose of extracting DNA, which was obtained from enamel on a tooth. He is reburied in Ivy Hill Cemetery in Cedar Brook, Philadelphia, which donated a large plot. The coffin, headstone, and funeral service were donated by the son of the man who had buried the boy in 1957. There was a significant public attendance and media coverage at the reburial. The grave has a large headstone bearing the words America's Unknown Child. City residents keep the grave decorated with flowers and stuffed animals.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. He deserves more than...
Yeah. It's so sad that nobody knows who did it. Well, I mean, somebody knows who does it.
Somebody knows, but...
But they're not coming forward.
Yeah, they're not even around.
Yeah.
Maybe his siblings, if he had any.
Can you imagine being a sibling and witness that and you can't say anything about it?
I'm pretty sure now they could.
I mean, now they could, but they probably... Well, like you would... Well, then that maybe he didn't have any siblings.
Maybe he didn't, yeah.
Maybe he was an only child.
Yep.
There are a lot of theories. Maybe he was a child from an out-of-wedlock mother who was doing it on her own and...
Yeah.
She just lost it.
That's so sad.
I know.
I feel bad for the kid.
Me too.
Yep. It's terrible.
To lighten the mood of the episode, we decided to put the Idiot Criminal Club in the end of the podcast.
Yep.
Welcome to the segment of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast. We call it the Idiot Criminals Club. Here is today's Idiot Criminal Club inductee. Take it away, Mike.
This article is by Mark Lungario from the New York Post. Thief caught after trying to rob same bank 2 days in a row. They say criminals always return to the scene of the crime, but a bumbling California bank robber didn't even wait a day before he came back to the branch he allegedly knocked over. Samuel Brown, 33, was busted after he tried to rob the same Fountain Valley Chase Bank 2 days in a row, cops said. The San Diego resident took off with a large amount of cash after he slipped a stick-up note to a teller at the New Hope Street Chase at 3 p.m. Monday, Fountain Valley police said in a news release. But the dough apparently wasn't enough for Brown, who came back to the bank the next morning and tried to rob it again, cops said. Police arrived at around 11:15 a.m. and arrested him without incident, according to the release. Brown had an outstanding arrest warrant and a rap sheet that included previous robbery convictions in San Diego, police stated. He's being held on a $170,000 bill in Orange County jail and facing multiple robbery charges, the release said.
He tried it 2 times in a row? 2 days in a row?
I mean, you would think he was switching his outfit or something that he won't recognize them.
Better wait like a month or so.
What? Well,
that's so stupid.
That's what I'm saying, because I bet he didn't get enough to cover his bail. I bet it was like... Did it say how much he was trying to
get? I don't think so. It just said that...
I would say maybe the most 1,000. I mean, I can't see...
He got greedy.
Yeah, he really did.
His bail probably ended up more than whatever he got away with.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, his bail was $170,000. And then you went to go rob him for like $2,000. Like, you got a whole, I don't know how much more to go, buddy. Damn.
I wonder how long his sentence was. Was it worth it?
Probably not. A couple of years or something. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
California, you never know.
That's true.
California is different.
They have different
views
and everything. Okay.
They're kind of leaning on crime.
Oh, yeah.
At the moment.
Wow.
So that's a wrap on this podcast, guys.
It was a very sad one.
Very sad.
Yeah. Hope you all enjoyed this episode of the Four True Crime Idiots podcast. Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and please follow us, the Four True Crime Idiots podcast, on all of our social media platforms. All of the links will be in the description. Until the next episode,
stay vigilant.
Stay safe.
beware of your surroundings.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you have any information, please contact the Philadelphia Police Tip Line at 1-215-686-8477 regarding the boy in the box. He needs to be named.